It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I think I said earlier, Sue, that it seemed like one of those afternoons, just because I'm the person that runs the board here, and I see the theme music that plays behind Sue. We call that the traffic sounder. That's official broadcast lingo.
Oh, yeah.
And it runs for, you know, I think 2.5 minutes. And when it's a really, really bad traffic day, that thing almost runs out. And usually it's a day where you have snow or ice or really bad storms. This is not one of those days, but that did not prevent us from having major traffic delays in and around downtown.
Exactly. And the problem right now is on the Illinois side. By the way, somebody just asked me about this on Twitter. There's also an accident southbound 141 south of Big Bend that's causing a delay there. But they had to shut down eastbound 5570 past 64 because of an accident. And it involved a semi and a construction truck. It looked like it might have been a dump truck. But they are now letting one lane through on 5570. But we have a parking lot jam. It goes back across the Poplar Street Bridge, back past Jefferson, and they're still diverting traffic. It's jammed up people on the Stan Musial Veterans Memorial Bridge. Traffic on eastbound 70, they're diverting onto Packers Avenue.
Oh, wow.
Just a mess.
And we got a ball game tonight.
Yeah, fun.
So, right,
fun.
Some people are trying to get downtown for that, so we'll keep you posted. Coming up in just a little bit at the bottom of the hour, I was thinking about Dr. Roy Spencer from the last hour. We could call Dr. Keith Kellogg doctor, but no. General Keith Kellogg, retired general, Fox News military analyst, the author of War by Other Means, a general in the Trump White House. You know, we're going to talk about a hostage that was recovered from Gaza. We'll talk about Ukraine. But, you know, it's disgusting that nobody from this administration showed up yesterday for any kind of commemoration for what happened at Abbey Gate, and they just completely ignored it. I think they issued a statement about it, and that was it. That 13 people died that day.
Awful.
And they want to act like it didn't even happen. And by the way, there you have the aggressive legacy media asking these questions. Not. It's just Fox and some conservative talk show hosts that are saying, how in the world could that have happened? So that's rather disgusting. We'll get to that. We have an audio cut of the day before the hour is up as well. But right now, we welcome back Michael Goodwin, columnist extraordinaire for the New York Post. We'll talk a little presidential politics and beyond that. Michael, how are you this afternoon?
So far, so good.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little presidential politics this afternoon. And I love the fact that even James Carville is out there trying to defend the fact that she's not doing any interviews. And this is just kind of normal politics because she's busy putting the convention together and all these things. By the way, none of which, you know, is true because all the people working around her are doing this stuff. So I guess this is a strategy that they think is going to work. And for now, it's working because there's no negatives on Kamala in this ticket because they're hiding, Michael.
Yes, look, I think it has become an issue that she can't even hold, you know, a brief conversation in front of a camera or a microphone. It's got to be scripted. It's got to be on a teleprompter. And I think that what's going to happen, though, ultimately, Mark, is that she will do this interview. She'll do it with a friendly outlet. The questions will be softballs by and large, and there will be a whole range of questions. So there won't be time for any in-depth conversation about anything. If I were doing this interview, and I have written that she should do it with me to give her more credibility, because I'm hardly a friendly member of the media for her administration, I would limit the questions to 3 or 4 topics. But I would do them in depth. So I would do the economy, you know, how did this happen? You've said Bidenomics was working. It clearly isn't. What are you going to do about it? You say on day one, well, you've been vice president for almost three quarters years. Talk about the border. What really are you going to do? Don't tell me about Donald Trump killing the legislation and all that. That legislation did not pass either chamber of commerce, either chamber of Congress, and therefore it's dead. What are you going to do that will get something passed, or what executive order are you going to issue that will fix this problem? And in that way, I would go through the issues. Really, just I'd say, you know, those two questions, foreign policy, and maybe one other on a specific issue, that expanding the Supreme Court, making Puerto Rico a state to add two more seats to the Electoral College, things like that. But I wouldn't go too far afield, because I think you're going to end up with just surface skating, which she is good enough at.
Yeah, because what I hear, even in you describing that, and, you know, let's put a couple of names in there. They're talking maybe if it's Lester Holt or Savannah Guthrie or whoever might do the interview. I could hear the questions that you're just, and the topics that you're tossing out here be part of the equation. The thing that won't happen is, my expectation would be, there's going to be no pressing. There's not going to be a follow-up. Maybe the question
exactly.
might be pointed, but will there be, well, wait a second, because you get that with Trump. You see Jonathan Carl all over J.D. Vance right now. And what I see, and I'm a person, Michael, that does not get into hyperbole very often. But when I think about what's going on right now with the media complicity, it's one thing that the Harris campaign isn't doing interviews, but it's completely different that our legacy media is playing along with this and protecting her. Because that's Soviet style. That's Pravda type stuff that we're dealing with right now. And I can't believe that the journalism in the Fifth Estate is willing to let this happen. But I guess they are because they hate Trump that much.
Well, I think that's the key. And if you look back, it fits a pattern, right? They did everything they could to elect Hillary Clinton. They did everything they could to elect Joe Biden. And now they're doing everything they can to elect whatever Democrat is on the ballot. Right. They hid Joe Biden's declining faculties. Many of the media knew about that. They had some access to him. They certainly had access to the people around him. Harris herself had to see evidence of his decline. But you read nothing about it. In fact, quite the opposite. What you read in The New York Times and others were attacks on so-called conservative media or Republicans for suggesting that there was something slipping in Biden, in the same way they covered up the Hunter Biden scandal. So the media is not going to change its stripes now, even though, as you say, whoever gets that interview, there will be no real depth to it. It'll be skating across a lot of topics. And there might be a follow-up or two, but at the end, the story will be she did an interview and it went fine.
Yeah,
and so
right.
What are you, all you Republicans, what are you talking about? See, it was another phony conspiracy theory. That will be the takeaway for the mainstream media.
Yeah, Michael, look, you called it recently boosterism, and it is disgraceful, and it is disgraceful. And I can't believe the depths to which a lot of the modern media is going to here to protect this candidate and this ticket. I really am shocked by it. I thought there'd be just a little bit more, you know, aggressiveness. And by the way, I've said this before, and I mentioned John Carl. I'm fine with Jonathan Carl, whoever else on that side of the media who wants to, you know, put pointed questions, tough questions toward Trump or J.D. Vance. But the point is I think we're summing up here, is let's do the same thing to the other side. And there's plenty to press this other ticket on that hasn't even been touched at this point. And we both know that. By the way, in your column, you mentioned this headline. I missed this one in The Washington Post. Doug Emhoff, modern day sex symbol. Who knew, right? The second gentleman. I have to catch up on that one, Michael, let me tell you.
Yeah. Let me just say I disagree.
Well, so let me shift to Trump and what's happening there. You know, I always talk about Trump in terms of teleprompter Trump and, you know, off the teleprompter, off the cuff Trump, because you can hear him doing these speeches these days and they're kind of boring. And that's not unlike they were, you know, like the way they were in 2016 and 2020 when he was off the teleprompter a little bit more back then. But when he was on the teleprompter, I think it was kind of boring. But he doesn't sound energetic right now. And there's criticism that the campaign isn't focused. I think a lot of this is because, you know, Harris is playing this hiding game right now. But what do you think about what Trump's doing? And is there an opportunity maybe to catch up here and gain some momentum?
Oh, I think there's definitely an opportunity. And I generally agree with you, Mark, about the campaign sort of. I don't think it's really found its way ever since Biden got kicked off. I mean, he spent, what, $100 million against Biden on ads and everything, and then suddenly he's got a new opponent. But I would make the point that Dan Henninger in the Wall Street Journal had an interesting column suggesting that the rallies had outlived their usefulness for Trump and had become something of a trap, and that he would be better off doing televised town halls, which where he interacts with voters instead, as you say, on a stage, you know, 30,000-40,000 people
love that
in the audience.
Yep.
And he's mixing a script with ad lib.
Yes.
And you can tell when he's reading and when he's just sort of talking.
And he does it in the middle of the, you know, he might be in the middle of a sentence and then he thinks of something he wants to react to. But you can even tell in that circumstance.
Sure, sure. No, and just the language that he uses, you know, when it's his own and
right.
You know, when he's reading from a script. So I do think that he does better in these interactions with voters. I think that is his strength. That's where he draws energy, I think, talking to people. And I think that's what he should do. The other thing I would give him credit for, I don't know how far it's going to go, but the Tulsi Gabbard, RFK Jr., this idea of reaching outside the normal Republican sphere and drawing in Democrats to his side. I mean, Elon Musk, I think, is another example, another kind of example of him enlarging the tent. And I think that's also what he's got to do.
Focus on the tent building, the coalition, right?
Exactly. I mean, neither party can just rely on their core. They've got to get those independent voters, and everything they do, in my opinion, should be geared to the independent voters at this stage. Don't forget, early voting starts in Pennsylvania in September. And several, I think there are a dozen states altogether where there's some form of early voting in September and October. So you can't just stick with what you've got. You've got to expand. You've got to try to get as close as possible to that 50% in the popular vote.
That's why, you know, I'm in the camp that thinks that the RFK Jr. factor is not going to be quite as big as some are anticipating. Now, I'm not saying that there's not the possibility of that growing a little bit, but I think most people, unless you're super dialed in, you don't even know what he's all about. So that's maybe even why the Trump campaign needs to do this more, to explain to people why they are expanding the tent. And there's an opportunity there. And certainly,
right.
I'm smart enough to know that these states that matter, there's, small differences, perhaps, 30, 40, 50,000 votes. So anything certainly would help.
Right, right. I think the best analysis I saw of the RFK was by a man named Andrew Yang, who ran for mayor in New York City and now runs something called the Forward Party. And he estimated that Trump could get anywhere from 0.5 to 1% improvement because of Kennedy in the battleground states. And he went through why. I mean, Trump in Kennedy was pulling as much as 7% in Nevada, 3%, I believe, in Michigan and Pennsylvania, the others in between. He thought much of that was likely a Trump vote, or it those people would not vote at all. But he thought that, half to 1% could become Trump voters in those states, which, as you say, in some of those cases, that could be enough to swing a state.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. Michael Goodwin, great to hook up with you again. I hope you're wrapping up your summer in fine fashion. We will talk soon. Appreciate it.
All right. My pleasure, Mark. Thank you.
Love Michael Goodwin. He's awesome on politics at the New York Post. We do have some developments, though, since we started that conversation, and this is somewhat interesting. They're going to do a tag team to a certain extent. So this is the story breaking essentially right now. Vice President Harris has agreed to her first major interview since she became the nominee. She's going to appear on CNN along with Tim Walz at the same time.
Can't do it by herself?
Apparently not. This will be on CNN with Dana Bash. Dana, of course, co-moderated the debate in June that we had a debate watch party for between Biden and Trump, the one where Biden couldn't get the words out.
Yeah.
They're going to tape the joint appearance on Thursday afternoon. They're going to air it at 8 Central time.
Tape it, of course.
But, you know, they do that a lot.
I
can't fault him for that. However, here's the question.
It does make me suspicious.
You know how this goes. You can do a taped interview. You play it exactly like you would, or do you edit it? Will they take things out? I would hope that they wouldn't take anything out.
Hope away, but I have no faith that they won't.
So some of the reaction, by the way, on the interwebs has been very, very interesting because I got to find, I read you what Sean Davis said at the Federalist. He goes, Harris is too stupid to handle an interview by herself, even an interview with a throne-sniffing regime media, so she has to bring along an emotional support pet with her to help. How embarrassing and disqualifying. But, you know, think through it here. She gets a tough question. Dana Bash is capable of asking tough questions. I see her do it on a regular basis of Republicans. I do not see her doing that on a regular basis with Democrats. So will she ask tough questions? But think about it. You know how it's going to play out. She's going to be asked something. And if they press her, if Dana presses her, Tim will also come in. He's the, you know, the attack dog, if you will. He'll take the hits. And we'll see if any serious issues come up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a pretty good get. A lot of people were hoping for this. They're saying exclusive interview. It's going to air. Yeah, I know. Right.
People.
Well, right. I'm trying to see if I'm missing anything on that. Well, good. We got him to finally sit down and do something. And then an update on Kirkwood this afternoon. I'm so confused. I started talking about this last week. There was a teacher in one of the middle schools that... During a parent's, like, what would you call that? Like a...
Not a teacher conference,
they called it, like,
priest,
curriculum night or something. Yeah. So the parents, you know, get to go see the teachers. So there was a mother who was sitting in a classroom of this Jason Kipp, who's a teacher at Knifer Middle School. Alana Austin is her name. And she finds out that there's... Well, she's looking at it. She took a picture of this flag, Palestinian flag. So the story goes, Sue... And we've been unable to get her on the air, but we've talked about this a couple of different times. She says, wait, why don't you just put up an Israeli flag? And he folds his arms and says, no. And then he proceeds. This is where I think it gets really interesting to me. He proceeds to basically say, because she points out that she is a descendant of a Holocaust survivor. And his response is, that's your version of history. The St. Louis Jewish Light wrote about this extensively. And... You know, so now you have a pro-terrorist middle school teacher indoctrinating kids in Kirkwood, which they seem to be very thrilled about it there, who is also a Holocaust denier. I would think that that would be a legitimate news story. Now,
yes.
Been very little coverage of this. Channel 4 has done a story, and they met in Kirkwood last night. They had a meeting about all this. They say that it's a freedom of speech issue because he has the... Well, I mean, if you take the Holocaust denying out of it, and if you just want to look at the flag issue, I guess they're going to say it's not, you know, anti-Semitic for the flag simply to be there. I'd like to know why he's unwilling to put up an Israeli flag. I think the answer to that is very clear. He's an anti-Semite. He denies the Holocaust. Why Kirkwood and David Ulrich, the ridiculously embarrassing superintendent, doesn't think that this is a significant issue.
Now, good grief.
I've done my best to put this on the radar of several people nationally. It's a busy time in politics. It's tough for a story like this that's local to pop through. Sometimes it takes a little while. But I think what's disgusting right now is that this guy, Jason Kipp, is still there at Knifer Middle School. Why? Now, her child was removed from the classroom, right? They say that the email, and I've seen a lot of the emails, the email exchanges that have taken place don't amount to a formal complaint. There's a process once you get to all this, you know, the blah, blah, blah that they go through. But of course, the favorite part of the story for me is, you remember what they had people do in this?
Oh, yes. We were going to get in a circle, weren't we?
Yeah. What did they call this?
Begin with an R.
I got to think about this. Wait, I tweeted about this last
Not
week,
remorse,
too.
Not remorse, because
Hang on, I
want to
get this right.
Any.
I want to get this right. Because what you do is you sit around, you literally have a stuffed animal that you hand, you know, between each other, and you can only say I. You can't, you know, it's restorative circle.
That's it. Restorative
so,
circle.
So this is what somebody sent me on this. This is so perfect. There's a stuffed animal, and it gets handed around from person to person, and then you kind of have to say, you know, what you're interested in, and you can't be accusatory or anything like that. But that's how they do this, like with a little pet bunny or something like that, like a stuffed animal, not like my real pet bunny.
Of
but
course,
isn't that yeah. fascinating?
That'll solve the problem.
It's just ridiculous. And, you know, the Post-Dispatch hasn't even covered this story at this point, which I think is even more humiliating. It's a real story. Parents are concerned. Why, Kirkwood, do you want a Holocaust-denying anti-Semite in an eighth-grade social studies class? Inquiring minds and all.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Audio cut of the day coming up here before the show is up, probably in about 20 minutes or so in our 5:45 segment. Right now, we welcome back General Keith Kellogg, who, of course, worked in the Trump administration, has written a book also called A General in the Trump's White House, and is a Fox News military analyst. Welcome back, General Kellogg. How are you this afternoon?
Mark, I'm doing great. How are you today?
Good. Are you ready to wrap up the summer? Can you believe the summer is almost over, technically?
Yeah. Look, I'm... I base it on sports season. I'm happy football's back.
Well, you and me both.
It'll carry through the election cycle, so it's really pretty good on that one, too.
We're usually not quite this ready for football to start, even though we don't have an NFL team. But, you know, with the Cardinals not performing quite up to standards here, I think there's a lot of folks even in St. Louis. Now, are you an NFL guy or college football?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Well, I like college football, but the team I've always followed is the Kansas City Chiefs.
Nice.
And the reason I followed them because, Lamar Hunt came out of Texas. My dad was a big, Kansas City fan back in the day. And my brother played for the Denver Broncos. So we've been an AFL team family for a long time, but I like college too, but. You know,
I love that. I love the Chiefs connection. That's great. You know, like I started, people in the audience probably don't care about football, but I do. We're going to talk football for a second. In the 80s, in the early 80s when I was here, you know, we had the big red machine, the Cardinals. Then they moved, and I went to Mizzou in the middle of the state, Columbia, started going to Chiefs games. So, not a bad thing. We air the games here because we don't have an NFL team on our sister station, my former station, KMOX. We air the Chiefs games here in St. Louis. So, yes, and by the way, they're going to have a better offense than they even did last year. If the defense is up to par, they're going to three-peat. That's my prediction.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was watching this guy, Carson Steele, this rookie. I tell you, it's an incredible runner for Kansas City. I mean, I just like the way they play. I mean, I like Andy Reid as a coach. I like the way the team is configured, the way they are. They just got an attitude, and I think attitude means so much about them. It's just, I just enjoy watching.
Awesome, that's great.
Besides Taylor Swift being in the
audience. Yeah, well, you know, there is that, but I my daughter loves that, so we'll just say this. All right, I want to get your thoughts on this this hostage that has been released, but also from yesterday, this question came up with John Kirby on the anniversary of what happened at Abbey Gate.
Neither going to Arlington nor any individual paper statement is ever going to be enough to repay these families and to try to make sure that they know they're supported and that they're loved and they're respected and admired for what they're going through. And nothing's going to assuage their grief. Nothing we can say, nothing we can do, no flowers you can lay is going to take that pain away.
Now, that was just a question about why was there no recognition of this anniversary? And that's John Kirby's answer. I guess he has to come up with some sort of answer being in that position. But good Lord, General.
Yeah, you know, I'll be very honest with you. You know, Mark, that was stupid. That comment was. Look, the fact of the matter is, you know, that when you lose Americans in combat, in those 13 we lost, 11 Marines, one sailor, one Army, and not to even recognize what they did yesterday, and Kamala Harris did, and the White House put out a press statement on it, is just absolutely disdain. And if anybody ever now says about President Trump, well, he doesn't respect veterans, don't go there with me at all. After
right.
what I just saw, what happened yesterday, and I was at Arlington National Cemetery with the former president, and how we respected him, how we laid wreaths at the Tomb of the Unknown with the three of the families there were individually, one at a time, went down the stairs, did it, and then we went to Area 60 where the vast majority of those who were killed in Iraq and Afghanistan are buried, went there and laid flowers on the graves. One of the mothers could not make it, so we FaceTimed her and talked about it. I said, you know, this is one of those, Kirby, that was just a dumbass thing to say. You know better than that. And it would be better if he just said, well, I have no comment. And just the disdain that they've shown.
I'd like to think that deep down, John Kirby thought, you know what, it's embarrassing that they didn't do that, but I have to come up with some sort of stupid answer up here, because I would hope that he's the one guy that seems to not be an idiot, you know, in the White House or connected to the White House, and that was disappointing. But, you know, the administration put him in that position, so I was stunned by that. I really couldn't believe that there wasn't more to that story. Let's talk about some other things. What do you know at this point about the rescue of this hostage from Israel? Because this seemed to be a pretty, you know, pretty good maneuver by the Israelis to get this guy back.
Well, the Israelis have a constant focus on trying to get the hostages back, you know, and they've made an all-out effort to try to locate them, and they're basically in the, which is a built-up area, which the whole part of Gaza is, all of Gaza, and they're just trying to find them and get them. And I thought it was a good maneuver for them to get them. It was hard to do it. Where I'd come from, though, and this is the frustration that I've got, is that, you know, there's still five Americans hostage. We don't know if they're alive or not, you know, Mark. We just don't. And because we don't have proof of life. And, you know, if President Trump had been president when this had happened, I go back to what he said on the 20th of January when he did the last State of the Union in 2020. When he said, if you attack an American, your life is forfeit. And after 10 months, he would have said, nah, we're going to create some cratering holes here because you haven't released Americans at all. And you haven't heard about those five Americans.
No.
And again, we don't know if they're still alive or not because we don't have proof of life, like I said. But the Israelis have made an all-out effort. And part of the reason they do that is they do have a great appreciation for life of their citizens, and they're doing everything they can to find them and get them out. But I will be very honest with you. I said this months ago. The chance of getting all of those hostages out alive is very, very slim, mostly because they don't have the medical care. They're not going to be taken care of. You know, Hamas doesn't care about them. So this is what they're involved with. So they got them out, good for them.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. General Keith Kellogg back with us this afternoon. Let me return to John Kirby, because even this afternoon, this is the comment from his briefing room on the topic of Iran and Israel. We believe that they, Iran, are still postured and poised to launch an attack should they want to do that, which is why we have that enhanced force posture in the region. So what do you make of that current situation with Iran, and how imminent could a strike be here?
Well, I don't think it's imminent at all. And here's why. You know, the Israelis have got a doctrine they call Dahiya. And Dahiya is basically based off a town that they flattened in the 2006 Israeli-Lebanese war that housed Hezbollah. And so they believe in disproportionate response. And so the Iranians know that, and so does Hezbollah know that. And that's the reason it's taken so long for them to do anything, because the Iranians are going, yeah, I don't know if I want to go there, because if they apply that, they've already said that the supreme leader of Iran is at risk. They've proven they are fearless if they go after him. They killed the number one guy in Hamas, Haniyeh, in Iran. Then they got the number two guy, Shukr, who was of Hezbollah, was killed. And so they know that the Israelis will respond quite overwhelmingly. So the Iranians have to ask themselves a question. Well, do we want to do this and risk our nuclear sites or the supreme leader? Because the Israelis will do that, and they should. When it comes to credibility and deterrence is based off two things. Deterrence is based off capacity, capability. Do you have the things to do it? Men, soldiers, Air Force, Navy, whatever. It also will. And will is the critical piece, because if you don't have the will to use it, then deterrence fails. The Israelis have proven they've got the will and the capacity, credibility to do it, to go after them. So the deterrence has taken effect.
Yeah.
Bottom line, meaning deterrence, they don't want to do it. That's the reason why we could have all the ships in the world out there. We've got now two carrier battle groups out there. But if you haven't got the will to use those forces, and the enemy doesn't believe that, or the aggressor or the adversary doesn't believe it, it's meaningless. You're just floating around the water. And we have proven time and time again, we the United States, that we as in our leadership does not have the will to pull the trigger and do something disproportionate. Not defend, but what I'm talking about, deterrence is based on an ability to attack. In other words, make them pay a price. And they're saying, I don't know if I want to pay a price. Again, it's not defense, because defense isn't deterrence. Being able to attack is deterrent.
You know, that's a great explanation, really, and that makes all the sense in the world, for sure. Let's shift just briefly here to Ukraine, because now you have Zelensky saying that he has, a victory plan that he's going to present to Joe Biden next month. I hope the president's alert enough to understand what he's talking about. He says his troops and the incursion into the Kursk region is a big victory, a big point in this war. Is it or not, I guess, because there's some people that are still like myself that still wonder if this is a winnable war. What would you say about the current situation there?
Well, with the Israelis did, I'm not sure if that's Brainard, the Ukrainians did something that I thought was stunning and incredibly bold, and I'll explain why. Well, they went in north of Kyiv into the Kursk area, the what they call an oblast, which is like a state, and they moved towards the city of Kursk, and that threw the Russians on the back foot because they had expected that. So what has happened is, one, symbolically, by the Ukrainians going towards Kursk, in the lore of Russia, that city has immense symbolism, because that was the fight in World War II, the largest tank battle in the history of mankind, and that was the site, the Battle of Kursk, that turned the war against the Germans in World War II, and the Russians were on the offense ever since then. The second thing that it did is the Ukrainians opened up maneuver warfare. They moved in mass, brigades worth of troops to do it. Mobile fight going on. The Russians aren't set for that. The Russians are based on an attrition fight. I kill one tank, you kill one tank. I kill one person, you kill one person. Maneuver fights are not their forte. It is for the Ukrainians, because that's how we taught them. So I think the Ukrainians have now put the Russians on the back foot. Was it a gamble? Yeah, it was. It wasn't a risk. They understood the gamble behind it, because what was going to happen was if the Russians respond in full. But they haven't been able to do that. And I know they're pulling troops out, so we're meaning the Donbass region where they're fighting. So I thought it was a good move by the Ukrainians. So what they've done, I believe, is now they're setting up an ability to say to the Russians, I'll tell you what, I'll give you back this piece of land if you give me back that piece of land.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And that's how negotiations start.
Yeah,
and
well,
I think that's where they're going to.
That's a great explanation, too. And by the way, I love the Battle of Kursk reference from this standpoint. I just watched a couple of months ago this, and it was pretty good on Netflix, the Hitler and the Nazis thing. There's a lot of images and video and audio that I'd never heard. But one of the takeaways that I had was, man, you know, in history, even when we're kids and we're growing up and we follow history, there's so much attention to the Western Front. The Eastern Front was pretty important, too, in what happened with the Russians.
Oh, yeah. The reason why this is interesting to me, too, you know, the Russian losses right now in Ukraine are enormous. 330,000 dead. You know, they lost 15 to 16,000 dead in their fight in Afghanistan and left. And they've had this number of losses. And the second thing, they cannot sustain a fight this long. Their army in Ukraine right now is larger than the active United States Army. So they are fighting a fight that is basically almost out of proportion to what they're able to do.
That's amazing.
So over time, after 2.5 years, they're going, okay, where are we at? Look, they're pulling T-55 tanks out of museums to put them in the fight. Those things have been mothballed since 1980.
See, these are little details. Yeah, these are details we don't hear all the time and every day, because they're certainly dazzling this afternoon. That's fascinating.
Well, what it is, now, so you got to put it in the mind of the Russians, how long do I want to keep doing this? I think my take, this is Keith Kellogg saying it, no basis in fact. I think both sides are saying, how the hell do we get out of this? And who can help us get out of it? I think they'd like to get to that position, because this is a fight that the Ukrainians are willing to keep going on and on, and the Russians are as well. And they're both saying, this ain't good. You know, this is what people forget, that in World War I, during trench warfare in France. The Brits lost an enormous amount of people, and they still to this day call the people that they lost the lost generation, because they lost a generation of young men. You're reaching a point that could be a factor in what's happening
Wow.
here.
It's a good
and you
point.
Look at the people leaving Russia. A lot of people are trying to get the heck out of the country. It's also why the Ukrainians won't let adult males leave the country, because, nope, you're going to stay for the fight. So I look at this. It's a dynamic environment. President Trump has said something. Zelensky has said something. We'll see where it goes. But I don't think it's going to happen here, because Putin does not like Biden. I don't think the opportunity is going to come up, because Putin's basically going to stiff him. His attitude is, nope, I'm not going to work with a guy like Biden. You know, this goes back to, remember what happened with the Iranian hostage deal? That thing was solved the first day when Reagan was inaugurated, when the Iranians said,
yeah,
we're going to release all the hostages. You're looking at something kind of similar.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's where we're going.
Yeah, we remember that very well here in St. Louis. Rocky Sickman, one of those hostages released, and what an amazing story. General, always great to have you on. This was great this afternoon. I really appreciate it. Enjoy the NFL season starting here next week.
I surely will. Hey, it opens with Kansas City. We're good to go.
I know. We'll enjoy it. All right. Thanks, Keith. We'll see you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Hey, I think I get to go pick up my dog.
Yay!
After the show. My dog Duke had emergency surgery over the weekend, and he could not come home yesterday, but my wife just texted and said I can go get him. So
that's wonderful.
My little dog Olaf is so bummed out and so lonely. He never just sits and looks at me when I'm working, and all he's doing is, like, his head is down on one of his dog beds and he's staring at me like, dude, what the hell are you doing? I have no one to cuddle up with. You're boring because you're on your computer. So he'll be happy that Duke is back.
Yay! Good.
We didn't know what was going on. It turned into what was happening in July. I've talked about it. He was vomiting a lot. We didn't know. We'd taken him to the vet in July, taken him back to the vet. They couldn't figure things out. Things had settled down for quite a while. And then on Saturday, it just got really bad. And they had to pull like a little squeaker from a toy, like one of those squeaker things. And apparently it had been in his belly for a long time and stuff had been growing over it.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
But he's okay now.
Okay, good.
Recovery time, though. Let's do this.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
I'm going to use my boy Scott Jennings because he deserves it. He's been on CNN doing great work, and it was a spirited conversation, as he says, with Abby Phillip on CNN last night. Because, look, if you just thought about voting for Trump, even if you didn't vote for him, the Democrats are, and people are like, how could you do that? How could you vote for Donald Trump? He's a rapist. He's a convicted felon, all this other stuff. And Jennings kind of put it on the table last night.
Because that happened does not mean I or Katie or any other Republican has to give up on every single value that we've ever had, whether it has to do with taxes or the court or any other policy. You're asking Republicans to turn over the government to absolute radical liberals over one day, and I'm not prepared to do it.
Now, he's talking about January 6th there, but also some of the other things, and he's right, because look at what we are given as a choice.
Profound policy implications and decisions are coming from the next administration. I firmly believe if the Democrats win, and if they somehow keep control of the Senate, which I don't think is likely, but is possible, they will eliminate the filibuster, and they will change this country in a way that we can never recover. That is important to
and
me.
What now, does listen, that look like?
I don't begrudge your viewpoint, but you cannot begrudge a Republican for wondering, hey, maybe it's not a great idea for us to drive off the left side of the road so far we can never find our way back.
Yeah, he said, well, you can hear him say in the background, tell me what that looks like. It looks horrifying. I don't have 30 seconds, only have 30 seconds, but we can certainly paint the picture of what it looks like. And we usually do that every day here on this show on 97.1 FM Talk. Sue, have a great evening.
You too.
I hope people can get through this traffic. I'm going to pick up my dog. We'll report back tomorrow at 3 o'clock.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
Hey, I think I get to go pick up my dog.
Yay!
After the show. My dog Duke had emergency surgery over the weekend, and he could not come home yesterday, but my wife just texted and said I can go get him. So
that's wonderful.
My little dog Olaf is so bummed out and so lonely. He never just sits and looks at me when I'm working, and all he's doing is, like, his head is down on one of his dog beds and he's staring at me like, dude, what the hell are you doing? I have no one to cuddle up with. You're boring because you're on your computer. So he'll be happy that Duke is back.
Yay! Good.
We didn't know what was going on. It turned into what was happening in July. I've talked about it. He was vomiting a lot. We didn't know. We'd taken him to the vet in July, taken him back to the vet. They couldn't figure figure things out. Things had settled down for quite a while, and then on Saturday, it just got really bad, and they had to pull like a little squeaker from a toy, like one of those squeaker things. And apparently it had been in his belly for a long time, and stuff had been growing over it.
Oh,
and,
my goodness gracious.
But he's okay now.
Okay, good.
Recovery time, though. Let's do this.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
I'm going to use my boy Scott Jennings because he deserves it. He's been on CNN doing great work, and it was a spirited conversation, as he says, with Abby Phillip on CNN last night. Because, look, if you just thought about voting for Trump, even if you didn't vote for him, the Democrats are, and people are like, how could you do that? How could you vote for Donald Trump? He's a rapist. He's a convicted felon, all this other stuff. And Jennings kind of put it on the table last night.
Because that happened does not mean I or Katie or any other Republican has to give up on every single value that we've ever had, whether it has to do with taxes or the court or any other policy. You're asking Republicans to turn over the government to absolute radical liberals over one day, and I'm not prepared to do it.
Now, he's talking about January 6th there, but also some of the other things, and he's right, because look at what we are given as a choice.
Profound policy implications and decisions are coming from the next administration. I firmly believe if the Democrats win, and if they somehow keep control of the Senate, which I don't think is likely, but is possible, they will eliminate the filibuster, and they will change this country in a way that we can never recover. That is important to
and
me.
What now, does listen, that look okay, like?
I don't begrudge your viewpoint, but you cannot begrudge a Republican for wondering, hey, maybe it's not a great idea for us to drive off the left side of the road so far we can never find our way back.
Yeah, he said, well, you can hear him say in the background, tell me what that looks like. It looks horrifying. I don't have 30 seconds, only have 30 seconds, but we can certainly paint the picture of what it looks like. And we usually do that every day here on this show on 97.1 FM Talk. Sue, have a great evening.
You too.
I hope people can get through this traffic. I'm going to pick up my dog. We'll report back tomorrow at 3 o'clock.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.